Welcome back. I'm Ian Masters, and this is Background Briefing. And joining us now is Graham Fuller, who is the former vice chairman of the National Intelligence Council at the CIA. He also served as the CIA's Kabul station chief and is currently professor of history at Simon Fraser University. Graham Fuller has lived and worked in the Muslim world for nearly two decades and is the author of numerous books about the Middle East, including The Future of Political Islam, A World Without Islam. And his latest book just out is Turkey and the Arab Spring, Leadership in the Middle East. Welcome to Background Briefing, Graham Fuller.
Thank you, Ian. My pleasure.
And Erdogan, the Prime Minister of Turkey, has had a bad year. I mean, your book suggests that the importance of Turkey in the Middle East, but just in terms of his political fortunes, he seems to have had a bad year, and he seems to dig the hole deeper every time there's a protest like there was in Gezi Park and more recently with the mining disaster. Could you make the case that his Islamist Party of Justice and Development is pretty heavy on the development side, but doesn't seem to have much of a grasp on justice?
Well, you know, Ian, I think we're looking, first of all, at a remarkable run of the AKP party, as it calls itself, the Turkish initials, the Justice and Development Party, AKP, in Turkey. This party, since coming to power 11, 12 years ago, has really transformed Turkey in amazing respects, politically, economically, militarily, culturally, religiously, and turned and had undertaken a major revolution in their entire approach to foreign policy in the region and in the world. So the book has a lot of praise and indeed goes into some considerable detail as to why these accomplishments of the AKP party in power have been truly remarkable and innovative, game-changing, and I argue largely irreversible. Now, what is unfortunate is that Erdogan, who's the prime minister and architect, primary architect of most of this, I think after, you know, over a decade in power, is beginning to lose his touch. We see this in party after party, no matter how good, you know, Margaret Thatcher lost it towards the end. It's sad, it's unfortunate, but I really wonder whether he is going to be able to regain his balance and not destroy, that's the most dismaying thing of all, not destroy the remarkable legacy of that decade. So I think the book properly focuses on that rather than the decline. Declines are never pretty anywhere. But I think that decade is what the book is about and what's so important and not canceled out by an unhappy ending.
Well, this unhappy year that he's had, and certainly in terms of an ending, it's not that way in electoral politics. His party just won handsomely. So what we're seeing in the press doesn't reflect the Turkish people's attitude. He may be losing his luster in the West, but he doesn't seem to be losing that much luster at home, is he?
Well, you remember, I mean, he has, according to Turkish political system, he has won very successfully, but this doesn't mean it's ever been a majoritarian party as such. So he has declined some, and the last election, furthermore, was not about parliament or presidents, but it was about mayoral, local, municipal elections, which you can argue may have been a referendum on Erdogan's decade in power, but it also had to do with what people thought about local candidates. So I think much more important is going to be the coming election for president this August, in which Erdogan himself is running. And you're absolutely right, Ian. I mean, people are aware now of the corruption that's coming to light. Not surprising after a party in power for so long. But there are no other really serious candidates out there. Well, I think people just don't feel, given all the successes of the decade, that they want to change horses. They may hold their nose and vote for him again for lack of anybody better. But those changes that he's introduced in every area are permanent and powerful and important to the region and to the West.
Again, I'm speaking with Graham Fuller, who is the former vice chairman of the National Intelligence Council at the CIA. He also served as the CIA's Kabul station chief and is currently a professor of history at Simon Fraser University. Graham Fuller has lived and worked in the Muslim world for nearly two decades and is the author of numerous books about the Middle East, including The Future of Political Islam, A World Without Islam, and his latest book just out is Turkey and the Arab Spring, Leadership in the Middle East. So let's talk about Turkey and the Arab Spring. I mean, first of all, just in a broader sense, the last time we had stability in the Middle East was when there was a Turkish Empire, right? And ever since 1916 or 1917 or thereabouts, it's been a chaos. What's your reading on the Arab Spring, which most people are declaring dead?
Well, I think dead is probably not the word. I think it's been suppressed and is sort of gone underground. But when people rise up across the region and bring change, even if that change has not proven successful and or is suppressed, the memory doesn't go away. The region has moved forward in the experience of a younger generation that knows that they can, in fact, change things, but they've got to learn how to do it better. So I'm positive in the sense that I think some good things have come out of it. But in the end, you know, the Arab world started out pretty dead in the water in terms of international power, influence, or prestige, and run by leaders that had no respect on the part of any of the peoples. They're dictators. They're often fulfilling policies that Washington has prescribed rather than what the people in the country want. So I think it's a time of reckoning, but Turkey came out largely in the Arab Spring immediately in favor of every one of these revolutions. And I think it was a pretty good guess in most of the cases. Where they failed was in guessing wrong about this total mess in Syria and the kind of uprising against the Assad regime. To put it in perspective, no country got this right. The U.S. has been thrashing around, Europe has been thrashing around, Turks, Russians, you know, the whole world. So everybody, the Turks thought, here we go again, another revolution, we'll back this. But in the end, it did not work for anybody. And I think the world has now decided that Assad, as bad as he is better than alternative, possible alternatives. But Turkey will be a major player in any future Syria, probably the number one important player.
Well, of course, Erdogan turned against Assad, who previously had good relations with him, declared him dead prematurely, as did Hillary Clinton. And as you point out, it's a total mess there. But he has supported the Muslim Brotherhood element, which was the biggest opposition element. And it seems like the Saudis have let in and others have let in all of the jihadists who are basically a gift to Assad. But what is the intent when you say, for example, he supports revolution or the Erdogan and his party supports revolution? They support the Muslim Brotherhood. They've also lost out in Egypt. I was speaking yesterday with a specialist on Libya who was pointing out that this new warlord general is trying to put together a national army to fight the Islamists, is complaining that the West sort of bombed Gaddafi out of business and left the rubble behind, left behind no army, no police. The vacuum was filled by Islamists, and the people who've been funding and supplying the Islamists have been Turkey and Qatar, both of whom are, well, Turkey's certainly an ally through NATO, and Qatar is an ally of sorts. So what's the sense of that? Why?
Well, first of all, you know we've talked about this in earlier programs. You know that Islamists represent a very broad spectrum from sure. violent to peaceful and radical and more moderate. So what Turkey does believe is that the Muslim Brotherhood, which across a spectrum, a Islamist spectrum in the region, is on the moderate side. I mean, that does support democratic principles in general. I'm not saying they do it well, but they have accepted the idea. I think Turkey and Qatar both believe that the Muslim Brotherhood believe two things. First, that Islam as a political force is far from dead in the region. Indeed, it's the source from which political ideas have sprung for 1,500 years. It's evolving for sure, but we cannot expect that suddenly tomorrow everybody's going to download the American or French Constitution and apply it locally. Islamic thinking, political thinking, will be a powerful force, whether the Islamists are suppressed for the moment in Egypt. They're not gone. The ideas are not gone. So Turkey and Qatar, interestingly, both believe that the Muslim Brotherhood does have a future in general in the region, or something like the Muslim Brotherhood. It should not be suppressed. It should be given a chance to develop. It should be also given a chance to fail. That was one of the biggest things I think about Egypt, was that the Brotherhood had a chance. They seemingly were not doing very well, flailing around, but nobody else was particularly doing very well either. But I would like to have seen them fail and fail at the ballot box in the next year. But they were pulled out, so nobody knows now how they would have worked out, and they can claim they were robbed. But anyway, so we have Turkey here, which stands basically in the region for democracy, for putting the military back into the barracks, for a globalized economy, for a moderate application of religion to political principles, and believe in policies that reflect the view of the people in the region and not something that is Washington's preference. So in this respect, Turkey is the absolute opposite of everything that Saudi Arabia stands for, which is no democracy, no globalization, don't open up the country, support hardline Salafi Wahhabis as opposed to moderate future political Islam. That, to me, is the real polarization, the polarity of the future Middle East, and not Sunni versus Shia, or, you know, jihadists versus liberals. It's basically about liberal or radical liberal or ultra-conservative oppressive views of Islamic politics.
And of course, it's no accident that Saudi Arabia have supported the coup against the Muslim Brotherhood and are financing the Egyptian military government that is somewhat isolated. They, of course, the fact that we support Saudi Arabia unconditionally, even though they have spread a violent and xenophobic form of Islam around the world, in particular in Pakistan and certainly the Taliban, they've had their effect all across Africa and now in Egypt. And clearly they don't want democracy or even any semblance of it. This is a medieval monarchy that doesn't. The only political activity is the largesse of the king. There's nothing else. And why do you think that we aren't really embracing Turkey as a champion of democracy, since we here in the United States are supposedly the champions of democracy?
Well, I mean, we have sort of supported Turkey in a number of respects, but you have to remember that Turkey really cut itself away, cut its ties with the United States when the AKP party came to power. I don't mean rejecting the United States at all, but simply saying, look, the policies that you've perceived, they haven't said it quite this bluntly, but I'm saying really what it was. They've said pretty much your policies in the region have been disastrous, have failed, and have exacerbated the problem with every single one of our neighbors and in our region. So we don't want to go the route of American policies in the region or support them. So that for that reason, they didn't even allow the United States to invade Iraq from Turkish soil. As you know, they refused to do that. So I think Turkey really is pursuing policies that, from my perspective, are basically wiser in regional terms, closer to reality, understanding reality, more than Washington by a long shot. And that makes Washington very uncomfortable, because it's essentially the American agenda, obviously, that Washington would like to pursue. But I don't think that's what anyone in the region wants, and that's why I think the United States is falling behind and increasingly irrelevant, if not angering, to most of the peoples in the region.
But if as you say, Graham Fuller, the real divide is not Sunni versus Shia, but modernizers and democratizers versus reactionaries like the Saudi kingdom, you know, the extent to which they've been duplicitous towards us in creating the Taliban and Al-Qaeda came out of Saudi Arabia, and they've helped destabilize Pakistan, etc. At what point will we acknowledge that uncomfortable, somewhat, you know, I think unhealthy relationship with Saudi Arabia? Or are we just so simply tied to oil? And of course, now that we may want to try and punish Putin if he does any more, misbehaves any more, we need the Saudis to pump extra oil to hurt Putin, et cetera, et cetera. So at the end of the day, have we sold our soul for Saudi crude?
I think yes, particularly in the old, going back to the old days, both the oil and economic power of Saudi Arabia, and by economic power, I mean what they can do with all their huge oil revenues and buy American weapons and stand on the American side of policies that are not popular to the people of the region. Yeah, I think we had sold ourselves or bought in, let's say, very heavily into the Saudi view. That's probably less true now, but still we're kind of stuck with it. I think the world has changed. Oil is a global commodity, so it doesn't really matter whether we buy our oil from Saudi Arabia or from somewhere else. It's part of this global pool. But I think just by default, we feel that the Gulf, we are the guardians of the Gulf and protectors of the Gulf, when that just really isn't quite true anymore. The Chinese and the Indians and the Japanese are the major consumers of this oil. It's flowing east and not west. They're the ones concerned about tankers and sea lanes. So I suspect that our role in the Persian Gulf or Arab Gulf, whatever you want to call it, is dwindling in importance. And a whole new constellation of international policies are emerging in the region with China and India and Russia and others. I think Obama shows some signs of this, in that he now sees that he can't call the shots as much as he might like to. I think neocons are just beside themselves. You know, why are we not asserting our power? But obviously our efforts to assert our power have been utterly disastrous, losing and exacerbating the situation. So Obama, in this, I think, at least sees now that we've got to back off a little from this idea that we can run it all and run it successfully.
Well, just in closing, Graham Fuller, your new book, Turkey and the Arab Spring, Leadership in the Middle East, has been number one on Amazon in the category of Middle East politics. And as you pointed out, the book really does explain what's happening in the Middle East, not in American terms or America-centric terms, but in terms of the reality on the ground. Do you think that that's why your book is taking off?
I think it might be one of the reasons, because there are lots of people from the Middle East, both Turks and Arabs and even Iranians, especially those living in the United States, who I think do feel a sense of frustration that so much of American media do not reflect regional realities, but rather the world that we'd like it to be or hope it will be, or various ideological blinders, and that it tend to ignore. And, you know, it's all through the eyes of that American power essentially creates the realities in the Middle East. I think Cheney said as much some years ago, but that's not the way the people of the region see it. The dynamics are quite different, and I think they are rather excited about a book that really reflects what they see as their own reality, and I hope it's the reality that Washington will increasingly understand and buy into.
Well, it's certainly, we are certainly fickle. I mean, I recall the enormous American enthusiasm about what happened in Tahrir Square and the revolution or the uprising against Mubarak, and now we all but have forgotten. We're ignoring the current situation. So when it's happening the way we like it, we're all enthusiastic. But when it gets real, we kind of back away.
Yes, sadly, that's the case. I think slowly, slowly, we may be learning because we can't afford to go on the way we've done it in through loss of blood and treasure and anger created in the region. So I'm mildly optimistic that even though we may be slow learners, we may be learning.
Well, I thank you very much for joining us here today.
Thank you very much, Ian. It's been my pleasure.
Again, I've been speaking with Graham Fuller, who is the former vice chairman of the National Intelligence Council at the CIA. He also served as the CIA's Kabul station chief and is currently a professor of history at Simon Fraser University. Graham Fuller has lived and worked in the Muslim world for nearly two decades and is the author of numerous books about the Middle East, including The Future of Political Islam, A World Without Islam, and his latest book just out is Turkey and the Arab Spring, Leadership in the Middle East. We're going to take a brief station break and back talking about how legal abortions are being shut down in the South.